thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Oh, wait.
Here's John Williams.
I think today we may have four, not just one, two, or three. You can keep score at home. This is John. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. We'll be here until 3 o'clock. I'll take tomorrow and the next day and the next day and the next day off. But we're going to have, I would say, four good days of show today. I could be wrong. I saw that Ryan Burrow of WGN Radio / ABC News is offering up reports on the Rand Paul neighbor incident.
Hey, I'm right here.
And I'm going to talk later on about this, and I won't be tapping you for that conversation,
no.
But can you just...
You're going with the lefty? Is that what it is?
Do
you have someone
right.
else warming up in the pen?
I got a taller guy.
Okay.
And frankly, his ERA is lower.
All right. It happens.
So it's more a matter of timing, to be honest with you. But we don't have an exact handle on why they scuffled or why this guy pummeled the senator, right?
Well, the portrayal that the attorney for this neighbor is giving is it's not political. They say it was something that most of us would consider trivial. Now, there's a reason you're trying to portray that, because if this is political, you've got a lot of problems stacked up against you. The FBI's investigating. Kentucky State Police are investigating this.
Oh, really?
If they determine that this was politically motivated, well, now we've got bigger problems. And what is right now a fourth degree assault misdemeanor charge could be up to felony really quickly.
So if it's over lawn waste, then it's just stupid assault by neighbors, and that'll be handled by a lower court.
You got it.
But if you attack a U.S. senator for his political stand on something, and by the way, Paul's been as critical as almost any senator in the Republican Party of the president, and if the neighbor's a lefty, then you would think that he could maybe have a modicum of support for his Republican neighbor, because he doesn't drink the Kool-Aid all the time. Paul's independent enough on these things.
Yeah, they've been neighbors for 17 years, and they hang in the same circles. They're both doctors. They both worked at the same hospital. There is some rumors among the neighbors that maybe there was a little bit of politics. At least maybe that's the reason they didn't like each other in the first place, or
right.
at least one side didn't like the other.
Right.
He's obviously, Rand Paul has come out against the Affordable Care Act. He's been against that for a long time now. So who knows if that may have played a role in some of this. We just don't know.
I'm going to ask later on in about an hour, what is the most unusual or ridiculous argument or scuffle or behavior of a neighbor that you got into? That'll be a little after 2 o'clock here on WGN. By the way, I came into the studio today. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. It truly is a lovely, lovely day in downtown Chicago right now. Breezy and brisk and blue. And I have a cup of coffee in my hand and I'm kind of hungry. You know, we miss lunch on this show, and so I kind of strolled into the studio, and I look through the window. And there's a big orange bag, and inside are boxes of donuts. I arose from my seat and walked zombie-like toward the donuts. When I got there, I found five bags, and they were names on the boxes, five boxes. And I thought, well, surely one of these will say Bertrand or Elif or John or something like that. But our name did not appear. And then you do this. You go, okay, whose name on the box is close enough to me that they won't mind my taking one of the donuts? And I really didn't have one that I thought, okay, I can pull a donut and they'll be cool with that. But I started to get angry. Who has donuts in boxes delivered to the radio station and then they just leave them there to torture us? Dane Neal, who does that? Who does that sort of thing?
Well, you know, this particular situation wasn't one of my, immediate doing. But oftentimes I'll, have stuff delivered and then have it there, not to torture anyone, to entice them to to enjoy some of the delicacies that our fine city has to offer. I know for a fact, because I got an email, this is so crazy. So I got an email from Mary, who is one of the great producers for the Steve Cochran Show.
Mary Sandberg, right.
Right. There's one of these, there's a bunch of boxes from Glazed. And then Stephanie, of course, she's an incredible social media person, put out the picture. So they're like, wow, these are amazing looking.
Yeah.
And she did say she had sort of a cryptic warning saying, I hope. She sent it to the people whose names were on the box, unfortunately, apparently, not you guys, and said, I hope that some of these end up in your hands. And I quickly sent back, because I'm like, wow, I said, I'll be in tomorrow, and I look forward to getting some of them. So can I have at least one of them? Or how does it work? Is it an individual box with a few donuts inside? And certainly you guys, you and Olive both have all you can eat.
I appreciate how you sort of shifted down towards the end of that sentence. There's five boxes. Yeah. None of them have our name. One of them has Dane Neal on it. And that's when I thought, well, Dane, you normally come on Saturdays, right?
I do, but I'll be in tomorrow to do some recording. That said, as a torchbearer for so many things, and many of them delicious, including the glazed and infused people, I think that's who they're from, is like, feel free to have, is there like five donuts in the box?
I have not cracked this seal, but with your permission, I'll crack this seal. And if there's if there's enough, Elif and I will split one of the donuts. Is that okay?
No, each have one, and they look great. As long as you you think of me as you enjoy them slightly. We've already done it, I think.
Tell people about your radio show, Dane. When they listen to you on Saturday, what do they hear?
Well, they hear talk about forlorn donut opportunities and typically missed ones. No, it's on the road, and we are going to have, actually, because of Northwestern, you know, we've been off the last couple weeks, so it'll be exciting. We're going to have a full show highlighting a lot of the motorsports things that are coming up. I know that NASCAR is getting into it, so we'll talk about that. We're going to talk about road trips, family road trips to the Dells. John, have you ever been to the Dells?
I have, and I last I was at the Dells, I went there specifically to hang out at the Ishnala Supper Club, and then hung out there overnight and loved that. I haven't done the Dells, if you will, in years, though.
Well, if you love water parks or just kind of disrobing to a certain discreet level, then it's for you, especially in the wintertime. And we got a chance to check out Kalahari, so we'll talk about that. And then the National Muscle Car and Corvette Show is coming to Rosemont, and we'll talk about that coming up on Saturday as well.
Saturday, what time, Dane?
2 p.m. to 4 p.m., so you get the full show on the road, and we'll start right then.
All right, I'm going to eat some of those donuts.
They will be good. Thanks, John. Enjoy it. Thanks, Elif.
Nice to hear your voice, Dane. We'll listen to you on Saturday, too.
Appreciate it. Talk to you soon.
It's our Dane Neal.
Did you just call Dane and ask if you could eat his donuts?
Yes.
Okay. Wanted to make sure.
Well, that's better than just eating Dane's donuts.
Well, I guess, yeah.
Are you kidding me? I think I just took the high road.
You did, huh?
What is your point?
No, I'm just, I was asking if that's what you did. That's all.
You know, I was watching TV yesterday, and the president is in China with the president of China, Zhang Xi or Xi Zhang. It's Zhang Xi.
Xi Jinping, I think.
So they're there, and this is the way I do not want people to cheer for me. And they do this in North Korea, too. When the presidents or, you know, whoever the leader is walks in front of the people and they cheer. Like if Barack Obama, jury duty the other day, people were agog. And it was just the whole rock star treatment. Hey, Brock, cell phones up, everybody take a picture. I get it. And I'm sure that if Donald Trump is walking down Michigan Avenue or his limos are going by, the streets would be packed with people waving and cheering and, you know, saying, hey, Donald Trump. But when they do it in China and North Korea, they don't just cheer the president on. They stand and they go mad. You know, it's like they have their hands up in the air, cartoon-like, and they've got flags, and they're jumping up and down, up and down, up and down with their hands in the air. Wow! Like this. The same way they do if you're at a basketball game or some sporting event and they're about to come out with the T-shirt cannon. I fully expected to see the leader of the United States and China start firing red T-shirts into the crowd because there's the only reason to behave that way. Watch the video of them and think, doesn't that look orchestrated to you? Doesn't it look like, and maybe it's cultural. Maybe in fact at, you know, 4th of July parades or whatever they have over there, the people just go bananas like that too. But there's nothing moderate about it. It's wow! And they are leaping in the air and gesturing with their hands up and down like this. It's positively aerobic. It's positively fake. If I'm Donald Trump and I'm walking there, I'm going, hey, gee, you know they're just doing that because they were told to do that, right?
Onte, onde. Is that Chinese? No,
that's Pig Latin.
Oh.
Tone it down because, frankly, that doesn't play. American audiences look at that and they go, that's not real, dude. They aren't cheering us. They're being, you know, shocked. this is what I fully think that if they stop, that they'll get current or something. It just doesn't look right. And in fact, it looks oppressive. You see that and you go, I know why those people are cheering that way, because if they don't, bad things are going to happen. The only people that cheer that way are people who are told to cheer that way.
They're cheering for their lives.
That's exactly what they're doing. Here in Chicago, there's a story in the Chicago Sun Crimes today by Fran Spielman. She's their City Hall reporter, and it's a walking wake-up call. Ed Burke, who, God, Mr. Burke, please come on my radio show. There's so many things I want to criticize you for. And so in this case, they've got this idea that if you are walking through an intersection in Chicago while operating a electronic device and it averts your attention, operative words there, that you can be fined $90 the first time and up to $500. They say, I love how this story and research, distracted pedestrians take 18% more time to cross the street. 18% slower. I completely believe that. 18 sounds low to me. I don't like it. I don't like them. I don't think you should have an ordinance that restricts this or that punishes people for this. The cops don't want to do it. I don't think it's going to encourage. What a waste of time. What a silly ordinance. Not everything should be fixed by a law that you don't like in society. 24 people get killed about each year because they're distracted while they're walking through the streets.
Nationwide or in Chicago?
In Chicago. It's kind of shocking to me. Actually, during the first 6 months of this year, Steve, 27 pedestrians have been killed on the streets of Chicago. 27. 28 same period last year. So after 9 months, say, 10 months. And I don't know if that's because they were distracted or because somebody recklessly hit them and it was no fault of the pedestrian.
Oh, so that's pedestrian deaths.
Affirmative.
Okay.
My question for you is this right now. Call or text 312-981-7200. It's real simple. I want to hear from you right now. Should we fine people who text while walking through intersections? I want to hear you now. Hey, it's time to catch up with our old friend Joel Stein.
Cartoon show on VH1, in which he works for a TV show.
This is his theme song.
But even though the show has got a sense,
already in progress.
All the interviews with famous people are for real. Joel likes to ask him questions that'll make them squirm.
Here comes the best part. Sing it home if you know the words.
Hey, Joel, what do you know? You got your own show. Try not to blow it, because if you're not funny, then you see me.
We still get to call him
Hey Joel,
a Time magazine columnist, because he still is Joel Stein. Hi, Joel.
Not for long. I have one left.
He writes the awesome column for Time magazine. The column that you wrote the other day, and I sent you a text about it, and you didn't respond, and that hurt my feelings a little bit.
Oh, I thought you were drunk. I didn't understand what you were talking about.
Well, you wrote...
I really didn't. I asked my wife. I'm like, she's like, just don't respond. It doesn't make sense.
I was reading your column, and you were talking about anxiety. And at the end, I thought it was rather forlorn. You were talking about, achievement and success. And I thought, no, Joel, you're still good. People still like you. I didn't give you all of that context, but I thought, why else do you think I'm saying this stuff?
And you texted him, I'll have another?
I just texted him, oh, bleep, Joel, no. I don't exactly remember what it was, but it was... Maybe I didn't loop you in enough, huh?
I'm also just not I don't like texting. But yes, that was very sweet of you, now that I understand your drunken thoughts. Yes,
I was not. I was not drunk while I was texting.
Was there an emoji of an olive?
And I'm anti-emoji, too. Do I know that about you, Joel? Where are you in the continuum of letters versus emoticons and emoji?
I'm beyond emoji. I just kind of, I just make gruntle noises into my phone and hope people know what I mean.
I don't like emoji. I like letters and words. I don't like symbols, but that's a different topic.
I don't even like texting. I literally don't text unless I'm telling someone I'm late.
So then you don't have a lot to say about the new 280-character expansion that we now have, huh?
I am on Twitter, just because they gave me all those followers a long time ago.
How many Twitter followers do you have?
Well, I lose them by the day. So at some point in the far distant past, I had over 1 million, and I'm closer to 900,000 now.
And you said, you've told me this, I don't remember exactly how that happened, that somehow you were gifted 1 million...
Yeah, probably more. Twitter had some suggested users early on.
Right.
And they made me one of them. So if you signed up for Twitter, they suggested following me. And
all right, here. You're at 918,000. You're at 918,000. And you're on Twitter. You tweeted 42 minutes ago, 3 hours ago. You're retweeting people. So you're on it.
Yeah, I feel this weird responsibility when they gave me that many followers that I suddenly had to, like, entertain them.
Yeah, okay. Well, so you're finishing up your tenure at Time Magazine. They've asked you to go away so they could put something else less expensive in that space, as I understand it. But you're now writing for the Athletic, not the Atlantic, the Athletic. What is the Athletic?
Yeah, so it's weird because I hadn't been aware of it, although there's a story in the New York Times last week about it. It is a new subscription-only, like you have to pay for it, sports site. And the guy who used to run Sports Illustrated called me a while ago without knowing. I still haven't told him I'm losing my time column. And he offered me a column every other week, and it sounded easy and, like, fun.
So now you're writing some sports columns?
I'm writing sports columns. And as you know, I know nothing about sports.
Does he know you? I mean, you're funny and you're in Time, but... Well, and he doesn't even know that you're not going to be in Time after the first of the year. But I, God bless you, Joel. I don't think sports are your wheelhouse.
No, but I ask you this. Do you think anything is my wheelhouse?
Point Stein.
Yeah. Have I ever written something? You're like, well, he knew a lot about that. He's the expert. No.
With the exception of stuff about yourself. I mean, that's the joy of a Joel Stein column. He's... You know, writing about nuclear arms or whatever, but it's really about Joel Stein. That's the thing.
Well, I will keep that up, even in sports.
Well, you actually kind of got off page in literally writing about a topic in this, your inaugural The Athletic column. Stein, a case study on why punching a teammate in the face is counterproductive. And you wrote about our very own Chicago Bulls.
That's why I called you, yeah.
Punching a teammate, you wrote, is counterproductive to organizations' goals, including but not limited to healthy players, good publicity, morale, and maintaining an attractive, blood-free parquet. The Bulls don't play on parquet, but if they were in Boston or someplace,
look that up. They're playing on rubber? Is that right? It's like a rubber court or something. What is it?
They roll the cafeteria tables off and they put it's linoleum tile.
It's made of something weird, like rubber or something, right?
Oh, I don't know about the surface of the United
States. I looked that up, but I figured in most teams are playing on parquet.
I don't think most teams are playing. Aleph, find out what percentage of teams in the NBA play on a parquet floor. I'll bet it's not five.
Oh, really?
Oh, I think parquet, you say parquet, people think Boston Celtics. That's all.
Or margarine. But is that right? I thought... There's a pattern the oak is in. See, I know nothing about sports or floors.
So then you said Bobby Portis and Nikola Mirotic are two Chicago Bulls players vying for the starting power forward spot. But they got into a fight. He punched him in the face. Mirotic has a concussion, a broken jaw, and facial fractures. And Portis, for that, gets an 8-game suspension. Mirotic, you write, reportedly demanded either he or Portis be traded. He made this request largely due to the fact that he was punched in the face and only partially because the Bulls totally suck. A kind of a phrase that you come back to several times in your column.
Well, I think the thing to know about this column, which was, okay, so I had heard about the punching in the face incident.
Yeah.
And then I remembered having written a story a long time ago for Time, believe it or not, when they had me writing sports, about Latrell Sprewell choking his coach.
Yeah.
And my thought was, you know, I've had very effete, elite jobs. Maybe coworker violence is common outside of sports, right?
Right.
And so I was like, oh, let me go find out, and I'll write it like a Harvard Business School case study. So I wrote it in the manner, style, and organization of a Harvard Business School case study, which cracks me up, maybe no one else. But I found out that, no, this doesn't happen anywhere else. Like, there's plenty of violence in the workplace, but it's never worker on worker. And it's never in the office.
You know, because everybody on TV and around town is going, well, if that happened to me at the office, I'd be in jail, I'd be fired.
100% true.
But really, it just, we have very few incidents to point to. That never happens.
never happens. And in fact, there's some super male industries like construction and mining where it will happen, but they do it like school, where they're like, look, we're going to go fight in the parking lot, or we're going to fight after work.
Right.
Because they know if they fight at work, they will be fired.
You wrote, in fact, only 0.1% of people have ever reported being victimized by a coworker in the last 12 months, whereas nearly 12% of the bulls have.
Yeah, huge. It's a huge difference.
You did the math on that. If you got two and there's 12 guys on the team.
And that's only what we know about.
But then you go to a point which I think is fair and we can't appreciate. And this is more problematic with NFL teams. And that is, you're asking guys to be violent and aggressive. And then at the last second, say in an NFL game, if you hit the guy too high or in an illegal way, then we call you a thug. But doggone it, they're wrapped up in the moment. They're physically trying to get you. And then we ask them to say, yeah, but I'm not comfortable if you do it that way. So there's a little bit of that going on here, right?
However, I talked to a very smart Stanford Business School professor. And I talked to a Canadian business school guy or psychology guy, professor. And he made this point, which is everyone in Canada says you can't take fighting out of hockey because they're all revved up and that's the game and the spirit of it. And he's like, what about Olympic hockey? It's the same guys. They're on the ice. And if they get in a fight, they get thrown out of the game. They don't just get fired for fighting. And there's no fighting in Olympic hockey.
And people love Olympic hockey. And people love the Olympics.
Oh, big ice. Yeah. So it's all organizational. Just like when you look at little kids in a Montessori school all calm and you see them in another nursery school going crazy, it's not like they have a different pool of kids. It's just the organizational structure. So, yeah, you got to fire people who punch each other.
By the way, did you just say big ice? Did you just say big ice?
Yeah, I'm a sports columnist now.
So you know that the international rinks are bigger than the NHL ones.
I love the big ice, especially when you get the 4-on-4 on the big ice.
Oh, that's good, Joel. Huh? That was convincing. By the way, speaking
of
and maybe listen, I know so little about sports. I'm completely out of my league in criticizing your knowledge of sports. But I do think you were wrong about the parquet floor. I asked Elif, my producer, to look up how many teams in the NBA have parquet floors. Elif, go.
Listener Kevin works in hardwood floors. Kevin estimates that 90% of basketball courts floors are made up of parquet. An up and down pattern.
90%?
All I got out of that was I need to take a left at the next light.
90%?
Wow, so parquet isn't what you think it is. That's,
evidently not, because yeah. I see it as that sort of alternating checkerboard pattern.
Wait, what was the answer? What percentage? I really
do it again, Ella.
So confused with it. No.
Listener Kevin works in hardwood floors. Kevin estimates that 90% of basketball court floors are made up of parquet, an up and down pattern.
All right, well, no, I don't think that's what I need.
No.
I don't believe that.
I think they're made of oak. They're red, maybe red oak.
This is not what a parquet is, the pattern. The parquet floor. Do you have a picture of the Boston Celtics floor?
It's the little triangle angle thing on the floor.
All right, we're off on a tangent we don't need to be on. Here's the thing that I think is the most important thing about your column for us in Chicago. And that is, you come to a conclusion about what the Bulls organization should do, because Mirotić does not want to play on the team with Portis. And Mirotić, I don't know how good he is. He's not an NBA superstar, but they're playing him a boatload.
He's making a lot of money, it turns out.
I know. Yeah, that's a different conversation. So the question is, what do you do? Force the two of them to play on the same team, get rid of both of them, keep one of them. Yeah, the Chicago Sun-Times had an article about what the players want to happen.
Oh.
In today's newspaper, in fact. And you wrote, organizationally, what should the team do? By the way, we now understand from producer Elif that while listener Kevin said that it's 90% of the floors are parquet, that in fact that may be bad information. So I'm going to back off on that because I don't think it's right either. And Elif is now doubting that. We'll get back to you on what percentage of the floors in the NBA are in a parquet pattern before 3. Joel, you might want to stick around for that.
Yeah, no, I'll be there for that.
Joel Stein,
Joel
Stein writes the awesome column for Time Magazine. He's got one more coming up. Just by the way, real quick about that, is it some big send-off, a tribute, a thank you, a highlights, your thoughts about being in Time? What are you going to write about?
Well, I got a bunch. I didn't know what to do, so I contacted people who did, which is my move usually.
Yeah.
And so I got advice from people who've written last episodes.
Oh, nice. So
got advice from Larry David.
Right.
And Gilligan of Breaking Bad, and Jenji Cohen of Orange is the New Black and Weeds, and Damon Lindelof of Lost, and yeah, so then I kind of try and go with their advice and write a last column.
That's funny because I would say in the case of MASH, Mary Tyler Moore, Bob Newhart, the last episode was classic and great and satisfying, and then Friends, and in my estimation, Lost, the last episode was a huge disappointment. So you kind of got
to talk to those people.
You got
to. I wanted to get Damon's advice on what not to do.
Okay. All right. And that's the one that you've written, but that won't appear until sometime in December. Is that right?
Maybe end of November. Yeah, right around, because they do all those double issues at the end of the year for Man of the Year, and they don't put out 50 issues anymore.
By the way, we now have more information coming in on what percentage of the floors in the NBA are of a parquet.
This is great investigative reporting. All this breaking news
here's
coming in on this.
Producer Elif in 3, 2, 1.
No, it's not more information. It's just a make good. I misheard him. He said that 90% of it is not made of
parquet. So 10% are. And then if you say, all right, what's 10% of the teams in the NBA? I'll bet we're around.
It's like election night. Like, that's a huge shot. From 90 to, I was 90% sure I was right, and then I lost big. Whoa. That's
the Donald Trump of NBA floors.
Oh, my God.
Okay, so what is the advice, then, that you were able to get from the experts on what the Bulls organization should do?
They gotta get rid of both those guys, make it clear that pushing and shoving and punching are not acceptable. And they look, they're going to lose almost every game anyway, so this isn't an important decision. They just have to send a message and start building this organization in a responsible way. So they have a guy. My advice, after looking at a lot of studies on workplace violence, is it basically only occurs in places where there's all dudes. So I think they need to get a female player. And I had really high hopes, because the person who's been filling in at power forward is Lori something, right?
Lori Markkanen is a guy from Finland. Yeah. He's 6'11".
That's what I found out. It's a guy.
Yeah.
So still, I think they should stick with him until they can get a woman.
Steve, do you have anything else to add to this?
I pretty much think Joel summed it up there.
Yeah. Well, the players on the team think that Mirotić has to go. They like Portis. They don't like Nikola.
Yeah, both have to go. You can't keep someone who punched. It's a bad message that the punching is okay.
It's like we told our four-year-olds, use your words.
Use your words. And I thought it was because Mirotić didn't speak English, but his English is okay.
Yeah. All right, we're out of time, so we can read your wisdom going forward.
I wrote one before this, and you didn't talk to me for it. So if you want to ask me what I think about the World Series, it's going to happen. You can do that now because we missed it.
Read Joel Stein in The Athletic.
Does he give you a passcode so you can get in, or are you paying for this?
I'm going to have to subscribe. I'm a big subscriber to journalism. And as you know, Joel, the site that you write is not without some controversy. A lot of people don't like what your boss is doing to the sports landscape out there.
Yeah, I read that New York Times piece. It sounds like I don't want to meet these guys who pay me.
Goodbye, Joel.
Bye.
Happy holidays. Joel Stein writes for Time and The Athletic.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Guess what?
Here's John Williams.
A lot of people are relating to the Facebook post I put up yesterday. I called my insurance company. I'm not the only one to be doing that.
Lord have mercy.
So I'm on hold, and the on hold voice says, your call is very important to us. The wait time for this call is 99 minutes. Literally, it said that. Elif, did it say 99 or 99 plus?
99 plus.
99 plus minutes, meaning they won't say 100, but it's at least an hour and a half plus 9 minutes.
And this is to call who?
Our insurance company.
Mm. Really?
And you left the room, and I heard them starting to ask you questions. I tried to find you, but you were nowhere to be found.
Well, okay, so to be fair, I call the insurance company, says, the wait time is 99 minutes. I go, okay, fine. So I ran down Michigan Avenue, and I went over to Crate and Barrel, and I picked up some things for Brenda, and then I came back, and the violin music is still playing. On hold. I just put the speaker on. Sorry about that, Elif.
It's okay.
I was listening to on hold music for an hour and a half. And so then, but I turned it down. Anyway, so then I come back in and the music is still on. I thought, well, I'll go down to the gym and work out for a while and come back up. So I'm down working out in the gym. And about the near the time where I was done with my workout, they go, hello, hello. And I wasn't there. No one's going to sit there and wait for 2 hours, right? I mean, so I thought, well, maybe they'll call. Isn't there some of these call centers have functions where they say, we will call you if you don't want to wait.
Right.
I love that function.
Our help desks will do that.
Use that function. They really do call back.
I was with Apple last night. Same thing.
Yeah.
Except mine was dumb on my part. You know, I called and did set up a chat, and they said we'll be starting in 2 minutes, and it didn't start. So I finally restarted the chat, and Jenny or someone came on.
So this is a faceless, voiceless chat you're doing with a person.
Yes.
Texting back and forth,
right.
Wow. That's an interesting option. I've used that before, but I'm not real confident with that. That worked out okay?
Well, yeah, because I had an update on my phone that I hadn't used. So I had this problem. I explained it to her, and she goes, have you updated? No. Why don't you try it?
Yeah.
And it was fine. So yeah. I could have spared myself the half hour of waiting.
I'm a voice guy, though. I just want somebody to go, hi, John, and then I can say, how are you doing, and all that stuff.
Really, that faux sort of, how are you doing today?
Well, it's better than when you get an automated voice and it goes, okay, I'll check on that. And then you hear this sound effect of somebody hitting right. The keys when it's a machine. It's a recording of somebody hitting the keys. Ain't nobody hitting the keys. It's an automated thing.
You know, when you're king, here's what I want to do. I want to send a little shock through the phone.
I know. I'm not mad at those people.
I'm mad at the of course, they wouldn't feel the shock. the people who call me.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And they wait for you to pause, and then you say something, and then the recording starts.
Okay, thanks, Steve. Yeah. I'm working on that. It's 2:11. Rand Paul got into some sort of altercation with his neighbor. We called a reporter at the Louisville Courier, I believe is the name of the newspaper. It's the Courier Journal. Thomas Novelli is on a phone line, and maybe he, as, you know, a local guy, can explain it to us a little bit better than the way we're consuming it throughout the country. Thomas, you're on WGN in Chicago. We appreciate your time. How are you, sir?
Doing great. Thank you for having me on the show.
So, what happened? What happened there, Thomas?
Sure. I mean, Kentucky and Bowling Green has been put into the national spotlight as a result of this. So, backing up to when we had the first reports of this, Senator Rand Paul was attacked at his home in Bowling Green, according to a arrest warrant from the Kentucky State Police. The person who is accused of this, the suspect, Rene Boucher, 59-year-old former doctor, also was the creator of a unique product called the Thermavest, according to reports from the Bowling Green Daily News. In 2005, he advertised this product, which helped alleviate pain throughout the body. It was filled with, rice and then heat it up and things like that. That's just a little bit of the background. But the most recent news we have today was Rene Boucher did appear in court here in Bowling Green, Kentucky. He pleaded not guilty to the charges against him. And we'll have to see how this plays out from here.
Did Rand Paul hit Dr. Boucher, or was it just Boucher hitting Rand Paul?
So according to the arrest warrant from the Kentucky State Police, Rene Boucher admitted to tackling Senator Rand Paul. The two of them are both neighbors within a gated community in Bowling Green. According to Google Maps, they live about 200 feet or a little bit of change away from each other, and they share adjoining lots there. And we've heard a lot of different things. Obviously, media reports are trying to determine what a motive is. And to be totally clear, the only two men who knows what led to this event are Senator Paul and, of course, Dr. Boucher as well. But we have speculation from neighbors that are close to Rand Paul who have no idea what had happened. And then we have some people such as the neighborhood developer who believes there might be some other. He speculated to several media outlets, including New York Times, that it may have been over something like landscaping, for example.
Yeah, yeah.
Was the senator, because the reports I saw said that the senator was mowing his lawn, and was he really?
We haven't been able to confirm that from anything with Kentucky State Police. We've also seen that reported in the media. We know that he was outside, and we know that according to neighbors as well, that have emailed us starting yesterday and today that Boucher went downhill and then allegedly tackled the senator.
You find it remarkable that the senator might have been mowing his lawn?
Well, surprising. I mean, it's great. I think it's great if he was, but it just
something so pedestrian as that. A doctor, and because Rand Paul is Rand Paul not a physician as well?
He is. Yeah. I mean,
he's an eye doctor, isn't he?
Rand Paul is a doctor.
No, I think it's pretty cool if a U.S. senator's out there mowing his own yard.
Yeah,
absolutely.
That's, yeah. I'm encouraged by that. Yeah. Next thing you know, he's going to be buying milk and standing in line at a Kowalski's or something. To continue,
Sure, absolutely. So right now we are seeing a lot of discrepancies in the reports. So we received a flood of emails from neighbors that have been saying that the two of them haven't conversed in years. They have no ideas what would have led up to this. And then, like I said, the neighborhood developer, Jim Skaggs, who has been mentioned on, he was quoted in the New York Times. He's been featured on also TV, radio, things of that nature as well, who said that the two of them are very different people. It seems like politically. We do know that Boucher is a registered Democrat. We obviously know where Senator Rand Paul stands on the political spectrum as well. But then as we dive deeper into this, the neighborhood developer Jim Skaggs has said previously, and like I said, the New York Times as well, that there could be something deeper to it. It seems like Boucher is a strict follower of all the HOA requirements within the community. He speculated that Rand Paul didn't feel as strongly about the 13 pages of regulations for the neighborhood.
This is classic.
And that there might be a discrepancy there.
Yeah, see, you said HOA, what does that stand for?
The Homeowners Association.
Oh, okay.
So, you can't have signs, your lot has to be this, you can't have that. It's a bunch of crap is what it is. I'm with Paul completely on ignoring HOA rules.
Oh, really? You are? So you sign a document that you'll follow them. And
you buy a house in the neighborhood and it comes with them. It's an all or nothing, and some of them are stupid. So let me ask you this. Have either of them indicated what specifically happened? I mean, have we gotten their first-person account of this?
So we have seen, just as well with an update on the injuries from the senator. The last thing we've heard from the senator was on Twitter the other day where he tweeted, and I guess the progression of this was initially after this happened, Kentucky State Police reported minor injuries. And then we find out a couple days later it's 5 broken ribs. And then just yesterday, the senator tweeted out that there was 6 broken ribs, and then there was fluid buildup between his lungs and his chest cavity and such like that. So the injuries have gotten worse since this has happened, for one thing. So we saw that progress. In terms of getting statements from the Rand Paul camp itself, we've only heard just some of the very simple basics. The Rand Paul camp has said that the two gentlemen haven't spoken in years. They weren't aware of any longstanding dispute, anything like that. Dr. Boucher's lawyer, however, has told us that it was over a trivial dispute.
Yeah, talk to me about that, Thomas. So my understanding is that if you attack a United States senator over political reasons, that the crime is different than if the two of you get into an argument over land, lawn waste, like your stuff's on my side of the line. And the next thing you know, we're rolling on the ground like a couple of teenagers. That's a different thing and a smaller crime. But if you attack a senator, for his political position.
Yes, absolutely. Kentucky state law has this categorized as an assault 4 right now, which is reserved for minor injuries. And obviously, from what we've heard from Rand Paul in the coming days since this has happened, very clearly not minor injuries as well. And you're also right. The next thing there is the U.S. code does say that if you have physically attacked a senator, there could be a maximum of 10 years of prison for that. So as we followed up with local law enforcement, Kentucky State Police has said the matter is completely out of their hands. When we follow up with FBI officials here in Louisville asking, what are the charges, they said that they're aware of them and that there's no updates. So right now, we're not quite sure where this could lead, but you are right. This does have the penalty for something much more severe than an assault 4 would carry.
Here in Chicago, we know about what it's like when two people close to each other get in a fight, since two of our basketball players for the Bulls got into a fight and one broke the other guy's face, and he's out of the lineup now. Similarly, Rand Paul gets into a fight with his neighbor, or the neighbor attacks Rand Paul, and now he's out of the lineup. I don't understand why, if because you cannot attend a Senate proceeding, you can't vote. It would seem to me like Paul's inability, say, to be at the tax vote That should not preclude his being able to vote on the tax bill. He should be able to do so from his home or a hospital bed or wherever he is. But I believe that, in fact, he will not be able to participate in that vote. Do you have any knowledge about that, Thomas?
Absolutely, yeah. So as we have been in touch with representatives for the senator in the past couple of days, we know, as we said, as these injuries have grown, that it's very difficult for the senator to move around. Flying is a huge problem for him. I've been covering him for the past couple months here with our newspaper, and, you know, he bounces between Bowling Green and Louisville and D.C. all the time. So being able to fly back and forth for the senator is practically impossible at this point. So he is on the long road to recovery right now. And as we know, the injuries have only grown and been more substantial. So how this will affect upcoming GOP votes as, you know, the GOP tries to tackle tax reform and things of that nature. It'll be really interesting to see how this plays out.
I don't understand that. You want people to be able to Skype it in.
You want interaction. You want senators from the West and the Northeast and the South to rub shoulders and deliberate.
Right,
and
because the Democrat's going to come up to Rand Paul on the Senate floor and go, I really don't think you should vote for the tax bill. And he'll say, okay, that's going to happen.
Well, so you would have them not interact at all?
I think in these circumstances, if the man can't be there physically because he's got broke ribs, he could do it over the phone. They could do a secure line. Don't we have that thing that Mike Pence goes to sometimes where he could, you know, go ahead and give a credible vote? I think this makes sense if it was the 19th century, you know, and by the time the horseback rider got there, maybe he's changed his mind or something.
So Dr. Boucher created a rice-filled vest that you would wear?
That doesn't
more
help, Steve. It's a thermovest,
so
Steve.
Yeah, exactly. Not so much a fashion item, I suppose, but definitely something that's used to alleviate pain.
But that makes him sound like some sort of ding-dong quack knucklehead.
No,
hawking things at midnight on TV.
No, that's not. I'm just wondering if Senator Paul had been wearing one.
Or is he wearing one now? Maybe that'll help him heal faster. So they've been separated, and the charges have not been elevated. We still don't know what motivated it, or did the senator himself play some sort of active role, or was he just blindsided by this guy? We don't know any of that yet, do we, Thomas?
No, we do not. And the Rand Paul camp has made this very clear that this has been a surprise, that the senator was blindsided by this, that this alleged attack came out of nowhere. And right now, the only two people who know about this are, like I said, Senator Paul and Dr. Boucher. And as we keep pressing within the days, we're hoping to perhaps hear some more.
So we haven't seen the senator, right?
No, physically have not seen the senator.
All right. Thomas, I'm going to call you again. I sure appreciate your time and patience and humoring us with all of this. It's quite the mystery. And if you don't mind, we'll as you discover more, we'll reach out to you again, okay?
Absolutely. You guys have a great day.
So Rand Paul has us thinking about neighbors that don't get along for whatever reason and what happens as a result. And Chris called in. You're on WGN. Hi, Chris. How are you?
Hi, I'm fine. How are you?
What happened?
Oh, this was a while ago, and our neighbors were having a really wild party, and it's okay. We understood, but it was getting pretty late, and we told them, listen, we're going to have to call the cops on you. It's getting a little out of hand, and they said, oh, no, that's okay. We already called the cops ourselves. We want these people to leave. You don't have to. We already did it. I went,
wow.
Oh, okay, we'll go back to bed then. We'll just... It was solved. We didn't have to do a thing.
Wow. There's a twist I never saw coming.
Yeah, it was pretty wild, though. Okay, thanks.
Melanie, you're on WGN. Hi.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm good. Talk to me.
Yeah, well, we live in a high-rise, and there's always something going on with the board, and there was this one guy that was pretty much making a lot of the decisions, and we couldn't get him to stop, like, spending tons and tons of money. You know, the balconies were done, like, five times and things like that over and over again. And I was so angry, just so angry. I remember coming home and just saying to my husband, what are we going to do? This is just cannot go on, and we just couldn't stop him. And I was just feeling to the edge. And I remember opening my refrigerator and looking down in the crisper, and there was a bunch of old string beans. And I was so angry, I grabbed them, and I ran upstairs to his apartment and just threw the string beans at his door. And my husband was, like, so angry with me. But I was just, you know, he didn't know that it was me that did that. But finally, you know, he was voted off the board, not because of the string beans, but it was just got, like, really out of hand when, you know, you don't have the voice to get them to make the right decisions.
For God's sakes, woman, you can't go around throwing old string beans at people's doors.
I know.
I believe that's a violation of the HOA rules.
Anyway, that's how that went.
I love it. That's perfect. Thanks for the call.
All right. Anytime. Love the show. Take care.
I support you 100% in your string beaning of the guy's door. Among the texts about the Rand Paul thing, we said, what are the sorts of nonsense arguments and disagreements you got into with your neighbors? John, I stole the neighbor's outhouse once for the school homecoming bonfire. I had to build him a new one. It was a lot nicer than the one that we took, says Ed. John, our neighbors who live next door to us did not like the renters that would occasionally park close to the property line. One day, our neighbor comes out. He's an older guy with his cane, and he bashes in their car windshield. He was also the type of neighbor that would steal your ball if it landed in his yard. John, this is from 815. My dad and neighbor got into an argument over who was going to clean the ditch after an accident that neither of them was in. They never talked again. John, I used to work for a surveyor. Lots of neighbor disputes. Here's one. The family got a survey to build a fence because the neighbors refused to wear clothes in their backyard. And this one says, John, we had a weirdo neighbor who always opened shipping boxes outside of his house and let the packaging peanuts blow into our front yard. Then, once, when my in-laws were visiting, he hung his tidy whities from the top of our wood fence. That was the straw that broke the camel's back. Somebody texted to us this line of dialogue over a chicken bone. Neighbor, is that your chicken bone? Me, I don't know. Neighbor, my dog was chewing on it. He could die. Me, okay? Me, why are you here? Neighbor, because I found chicken bones in your trash. Me, this is nuts. I'm calling the cops. Yeah. A couple calls here. Elizabeth, this is John. You're on WGN. Hello.
Hi, John. How are you?
Good. Talk to me. What do you have?
Okay. I was just talking to my friend in Bowling Green, and this is what she told me.
Yeah.
She said that Rand Paul bought the property maybe 16, 17 years ago and wanted to do certain things, and the board kept saying no, 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 and he finally built the house. So there had been some problems with the HOA before. And the doctor is a very rules person. The week before this incident, Rand Paul was out there on a Sunday morning early blowing his leaves, and they went into the neighbor's yard because they don't have big fences.
Yeah.
And so this week, the same thing happened again. It was early, and he was blowing them into the neighbor's yard, and the neighbor just lost it. I don't know. I can't. And now I don't remember whether it was he was mowing the lawn or it was the leaves again. But anyhow, that was the case. And whether it was the lawnmower or the leaf blower, Rand Paul didn't hear him when this guy was screaming and yelling at him.
Those leaf blowers are really annoying. It's no reason to assault somebody and break half of his ribs, but doggone it, those things are the bane of neighborhoods in the fall.
Well, I guess it was just the straw that broke the camel's back.
How about that? It broke the senator's ribs.
In this whole situation.
Yeah. You know, I totally believe that. I mean, all this high intrigue, was it politics or something? No, it's just two neighbors that don't like each other, and the one guy's making all that racket and blowing the leaves in my yard at 8 in the morning on a Saturday. Doggone it. And the next thing you know, you're on top of him breaking his ribs. You can't believe you did not get up that morning thinking you were going to break Rand Paul's ribs. Nobody's probably more surprised than the neighbor doing the breaking. You know, you just go bing.
Wow. Yeah, she said it had nothing to do with politics at all.
Yeah, I'll bet you're right. Hey, thanks for the phone call. Keep us posted, Elizabeth.
Okay. Thank you.
There you have it, Stevie. I've got inside information now.
The party line there paid off.
Hey, Glenn, this is John. You're on WGN Radio. Hi, Glenn.
Hi, John. It's nice to talk to you.
Likewise.
I don't have a story quite as intriguing as the Rand Paul story. And in fact, my neighbors, I never had a fight with them. They were very nice. But when they would leave for weekends in the summer, their young teenage daughters would have parties. We're too loud, but every Sunday I'd be cleaning up beer cans that came through the sparse bushes that were up front. Well, finally, one Sunday, I'm out there, and I guess I had had enough, and I knew the parents would be coming home in a couple hours. It was already dark. I stacked them all along their driveway. The party's ended.
Well played.
Thank you.
That's, you know, there's not Glenn beating somebody up. You just kind of say, all right, I know how to fix this. I know how to end these parties. This is Judy. Hey, Judy, I'm John, and you're on WGN Radio. How are you?
Good afternoon, John.
What happened?
Can you hear me?
What happened, Judy?
Well, it's a sad story. We had a neighbor 30 years ago who was about two houses down, crabbiest man on the street. Oh, terrible. You avoided him. You didn't trick-or-treat there. And he would walk his dog and not clean up what it left on my lawn. This went on for a while until I walked down to his house, rang the doorbell, he answered, and I said, if you persist in walking your dog, not cleaning it up on my lawn, I will bring my three children to decorate your lawn. And I never had a problem after that.
That's not how I thought this story was going to end.
I don't think anyone would write that one.
No, but here's how this story I thought ended. So then I picked it up and I decorated his house with it, because that has happened. I've heard that story before too. I'm glad you didn't resort to that, Judy.
No, I wouldn't do, I mean, that was just one of those tongue-in-cheek things.
Well, was he kind of sheepish? Like, did he go, yeah, I know, I've got that bad habit. Was he kind of cool about it, or what?
No, this crabby old man, he had no affect on his face. He just shut the door.
And his dog never went in your, well, hey, problem solved. You win, Judy.
Yeah, well, he is a little bit of humor, and sometimes it works.
Thank you for the call, Judy, and thank you for listening. So what was the story, too? Does anybody remember the story that happened in the last, I don't know, few months of the woman? Ella, if you may have to search this out for me, but there was and I don't think she was a mentally well woman, but she was a jogger running through the neighborhood, and she would always stop and squat and go to the bathroom in somebody's yard, and it happened all of the time, and they couldn't get her to stop. They put up signs. Doggone it. Am I just dreaming this? Was that a call, or am I just making this story up? It seems to me like that happened, and this happened here in the Chicago area, as I recall. And so they called the cops and said, hey, you got to get this lady. She's got to stop pooing in her yard. My estimated probability of accuracy on this, Kevin, you're a bright guy. I see you there in sports. And while this doesn't have to do with sports, it is a jogging story. Do you remember hearing anything about the lady that was going to the bathroom in the people's yards?
I hadn't heard that, John, no. This is news to me.
Ella, what happened to the thing about the lady in the people's yard?
A Colorado Springs woman, also known as the Mad Pooper, would jog on people's yards and leave a present for them.
I think I did hear about this.
This was in Colorado? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So did she, like, she just enjoyed it? I mean, that
I don't think
that
she was well. Oh. I mean, how else do you explain that? I mean, or she's some sort of weird exhibitionist.
Extreme IBS.
I've been jogging before, and I've had to go to the bathroom. I know that feeling, but boy, I never had to go.
Worse than that.
But the thing was, I know, isn't that the worst
thing?
When
you're, like, so far away.
I know. Maybe
when you're ready to turn back and you're like, mother of God, I shouldn't have ate that burrito last night.
Well, I've been jogging before. Okay, I'll just tell you this.
Uh-oh.
And, yes. And you know, you go, oh, there it is. You get that feeling. You go, I'm going to have to go to the bathroom pretty soon. And so then you say, okay, I'm a quarter mile out, but I really want to jog a couple of miles. So then you begin to do the calculation of the return trip. Can I go another 400 yards, and then will I still have 400 yards back? You know your body. You know how fast you can run.
Yeah, but the worst is when you turn the corner and you can see your house or your apartment, and it's like, but it's still far, but you can see it because your body thinks it's like. But then you also can't run for obvious reasons, but you don't want to walk because you want to get there faster. It's a nightmare.
It's a terrible dilemma. If I run faster, I'll have to go. Right. If I go slower, then it'll take me forever to get there.
Exactly.
So the next thing you know, you're in somebody's front yard. Right. So, and if that happens once, okay, you've got a story to tell. But it was happening right consistently. Yeah. Like the lady. She should have learned her lesson the first time. Yeah. I just don't think she was a well person. Here's a neighbor story. It says, hey, John, our neighbor was screaming and complaining that our downspout was flooding his yard. My husband got so mad he ripped it off the side of our house and threw it into his yard, which probably felt really good until then the next time it rains. You just got all that water around your foundation. And Lou Manfredini will tell you that that could lead to basement flooding. Kevin and I are sharing way too much information about jogging in the woods.
Mention it on air.
I want to know.
Keep it off air. It's not for public consumption. I'm nearly throwing up over here.
What happens?
John and I are talking, and I see in the little video screen, I see Anna walk in the studio. I'm like, oh, boy, she walked in at the wrong time.
Just telling a story about when you're out for a jog, and you go, oh, no, I can't make it back. What do you do?
Bowel movements we're talking
pepperoni
about.
Pepperoni calzone from the night before.
You've got knee pain, and it's keeping you from hiking. It wakes you at night when you turn in bed. It kept you from dancing at your daughter's wedding, it says here. Listen, knee pain can affect the quality of your life in so many ways. I want it to end, and the Joint Relief Institute in Orland Park can do that. They use advanced digital technology to see why and exactly where your knee is bothering you. And then they gently place an all-natural joint lubricant into your knee. They did this for me. I'm telling you, they'll do it for you. The process is not surgery. It's pain-free. Your insurance almost certainly will pay for it. And if it doesn't work, I will be shocked. Call 708-888-0000. They're in Orland Park. 708, that's Orland Park. 888, you can remember that. 0000, as in zero pain. This is the Joint Relief Institute. Good grief. Give them a call. 708-888-0000. Anna DeVolantis, unfortunately, is in the studio.
Oh,
hi, Anna.
I'm happy to be in the studio, just not at the moment I walked in. Sometimes you walk in mid-conversation. You don't necessarily know what's going on. But,
Anna's here. Anna's here. Stop talking.
Yuck. But on to other things. We're going to be talking politics with Michael Steele, the former head of the Republican Party. Here we've got the tax bill that moved out of the House Ways and Means Committee, heading for a full vote on the House floor. Yeah. And it's we'll talk about its contents, what it means for you, what if it's likely to pass.
Did you see Michael Steele's devastating forward tweet?
No. I follow him. I love following him on Twitter.
Somebody was, it was back and forth about Trump or the taxes or something, and they said, Steele owns it in four words. And it was to Donald Trump, did you win Virginia? Did you win Virginia? Because he was talking about that Virginia race. And I don't know, you might mention it to him. A lot of people kind of retweeted and patted him on the back for his four-word tweet.
Well, I will ask him about that. We're also going to ask him about Trump in China, the president talking about China, saying, I don't blame you for what you're doing with the whole taking advantage of our copyright laws and things like that. But he blames the prior administration, of course, and is trying to make friends with China again. And we'll see what happens with his visit there. We'll get some feedback from Michael Steele. We also have the Blackhawks Pick'em game, the least favorite game amongst the crew here. We always seem to get in arguments during the game.
It's the most confusing game at WGN Radio.
And it should be easy, but somehow it's made difficult.
I'm winning, so I like it.
Because it's a favorite of hers. But we'll play it. We'll play it anyway. And then
it's
Tom
the worst
Skilling.
Thing we ever came up with.
It really is.
Is it only because I'm winning? Ruse,
at least you're committed to it, Ro. I mean, at least you're staying with it.
Well, I think we're afraid to get rid of it, quite honestly. That somehow, maybe it's a hit. I don't know.
The listeners are very good at this game.
Yes. Well, they win every time because they go first. It's anyway, it doesn't really matter, does it? Does it really? And today, we need our Hawks to just get on a roll. That's all we care about.
It's so weird. They were off to such a good start. At least that first game. You beat the defending Stanley Cup champions 10 to, was it one?
Think so,
10
yes.
goals in the yeah. first game. You thought, oh, even if it's half this good, we'll be in great shape. We're
right.
not in great shape right now.
Now, it's going to be better, though. And I just hope that now, if it's determined that this game is a reason for them not being good, then we'll have a reason to cancel it.
Right.
We have to talk to the Hawks about that.
Boy, that'd be weird if we were able yeah. to link what you guys are doing here to mm-hmm. their, you know, malaise
right.
that you're going through.
Exactly. Yes.
Let's hope it's not on us, because this game isn't going to get better, I don't think.
Yeah, no, for
it
sure
can't
not.
Be fixed.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, thank you, John.
Yeah.